Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination number 239. This is the 2B edition. We are back to basics. We're going to fix the mistake, focus on what works, and hopefully give you a nice, clear, concise, and error-free episode. Of course, I started off the episode dipping the audio just a little too early, so we're getting off to a great start here. But you know what? That's not it's not important. In the last couple episodes, in case you've been remiss and you haven't heard what's all happened, we've either posted it a day late, we've had strange computer crashes, so we're trying to get everything nice and simplified here. I'm making sure everything's right and set everything up to start recording. This is an incredibly late recording session. We're actually starting at 12:16 in the a.m. on Thursday, June 5th, 2008. So it's incredibly late. We haven't done one this late for a while. However, I am well caffeinated, which is a fantastic thing for the caffeination to actually be. So on today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following topics. You're going to hear about the basics, which we already went over a little bit, workflow, robots, Roombas, wheelchairs, Plurk, Dilbert, and Folgers. It's a kind of a divergent little series of topics there. Hopefully, you're going to enjoy everything we got going for you. The Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. You can find all the other member shows over at techpodcasts.com, where each and every person has agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. So this is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. You can find this lovingly nestled with all of its other little friendly episodes over at www.caffeination.com. That, of course, coincidentally enough, is caffeination.com. So, it's a great day to be here with you, all of you. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this show. I'd like to thank, first off, like I've been doing it at the end of the show, but I'd like to spend a little second or two here. Thank you, everybody who's a new listener. Hi and welcome to the show. Hopefully you're going to enjoy us. Hopefully you're going to join into the little nation that we have growing here around the Caffeination Podcast. And for all of the listeners, the longtime sufferers here with us, thank you so much. You were the reason that we were able to do this twice a week, and some people have called us crazy, and those some people will probably be right, but I believe that we have a good show here. I believe that, you know, from what everybody's told me so far, that I think we're doing good, and you know, we're rolling with the punches here, and hopefully we're just going to give you a very good and relatively error-free episode here today. But before we get too far into it, we just wanted to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. When you meet with colleagues or clients in person, you end up spending a fortune on gas or airfare, and you waste all of your time in traffic, at airports, or in hotels. All that waste for just a two-hour meeting. This problem will not trouble you any longer. Just do more and travel less. Hold a meeting online from your computer with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com during the conference call and sees your computer desktop on all of their monitors. You get more done in a lot less time without the hassle of driving or the pain of flying. No lines with this. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. With this special offer, just visit www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts to get your free trial today. Like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all sorts of fun things, and hopefully, you know, we'll continue the association. Hopefully, we'll be able to continue to give you this fantastic voyage that we're currently on here. But we're going to dive right on into the TechCruft. We got a little bit of caffeine and food towards the end of the show. We're actually fairly well stocked on both sides of things, so we're going to just kind of try and wing it here. The first thing we have here in TechCruft is actually a continuation of the last podcast, where we talked a little bit about Twitter. And a lot of people have been asking me, both offline and online recently, why do you still go back to Twitter? I go to Twitter for the same reason that for the longest time everybody was on MySpace. It is where everybody is. It's where all the people are. It's a very short and easy and concise way to communicate with a lot of different people. And it just so happens that there is no way to export all those people and say, okay, I need to find you on every other social network that I'm out there. And there's a new one that's recently come up called Plurk. Yeah, it has an awesome name when you really think about it, because you can. It sounds so much like a verb, and it's not a real word, that you can plurk pretty much anything. And it has a. I like how it works. It has a lot of really fun features to it, and it. One of the funniest things about it is that it's all Ajax, so it actually looks like a timeline. However, it's a little bit counterintuitive in that it goes from left to right. So the earliest content is actually on your left-hand side, while the latest is actually on the far right-hand side. And what it does is it's actually like a timeline of people. So, and you can comment on each individual little posting or Plurk. And there's a lot of stuff that's worked in there. They actually have a karma system which allows you to build up renown within the community, and as you get higher karma it unlocks certain things. And it does seem to be a little bit more like Seismic in that there's a lot of tomfoolery that goes on there, which is kind of fun, kind of cool. But at the same point in time, with Twitter, there's no emoticons, there's no, you know, dancing bananas, which I know somebody, not naming names, the tick, actually ends up using a lot of them, and you have to get a certain amount of renown or a certain amount of karma actually in your bank to unlock certain emoticons. And once people certainly do that, they end up kind of abusing it a little. That's perfectly fine. It's a fun different way. It's still finding its way throughout the world. It kind of burst onto the scene on Monday, and people are very pretty much dissatisfied with Twitter because of the amount of time that it's up and down, and you can never really count on certain things. Like, for instance, I was at the baseball game the other night. I was trying to tweet from the baseball game, and I wasn't able to actually get to it via mobile. I wasn't able to actually get to the Twitter mobile site and found out that was down. And it was just kind of irritating at one point, but at the same point in time, that's where everybody I know online is. So it's the easiest thing in the world to contact or to work with people. And I like the fact that there's other services that kind of plug in. There's Twitcher, there's Brightkite, there's a whole bunch of other services that recognize that that's where the largest user base is. So they're just kind of addendums. They're kind of little accessories to your lifestyle. So I have a couple little links here over to, first of all, to Plurk. So if you need an invite, please send me an email at caffeination@gmail.com. I think they just have open enrollment right now, so you can just head on over there and check that out. I am, of course, the Caffeination on Plurk, and I kind of put a little thing out there, and so there's a bunch of different people commenting in there right now. I said, wondering if anybody wants to add a comment into the show in real time. I'll be talking about Plurk in a minute or two, so speak up. So we have Chase Co., who says, I've only been Plurking for less than a day and plan to keep it up. Settington 86 says, I really like the comment feature. It keeps the replies contained. Not sure if it'll beat Twitter to me, but it's sure trying. And then there was a little bit of back and forth after that. I got to admit, I really agree with Settington. It is fantastic to see the comment feature. You know, it's one of the best things about Plurk. It's one of the things where it's like you go there, and with Twitter, when I make a comment on Twitter, it just kind of goes off into the ether. If somebody wants to talk to me or comment on what I just said, it ends up being way down in the stream, and there's no real way to thread back and follow the conversation. With Plurk, one of the interesting things is actually under each different little posting, it has a whole bunch of stuff right under it, and it's hard to follow. So it's really nice and neat to actually be able to do that, and I think I'm going to plan on keep using it. There's a way to make all of these different social networks work together. That's going to really increase the value of them for me. I mean, I'm one of the early adopters for a lot of things. I like to try new things out. I like to play around with them. And I put another article up about from Frank Martin, who has a really good pinpoint discussion about what Twitter is actually lacking and why things like Plurk are actually taking off. And he does his own take on things. So I like the fact that everybody's at Twitter, and I like the fact that people are migrating over to Plurk as opposed to another thing like Pounce. And I know all these different things are kind of flying out there, and if you were clueless about all of them, you know, hey, just head on over to Pounce.com. That's P-O-W-N-C-E. You can head on over to Plurk.com. It sounds just like it's spelled P-L-U-R-K. I'm Caffeination on Pounce, Caffeination on Jaiku, Caffeination on Plurk, and Twitter, of course. The people over at Plurk have actually put a fun little guide out there. It says, beware the dangers of what they say. You need to follow safe Plurking, but I'm saying you need to watch out for unprotected Plurking. It basically gives you, that's probably going to be the last time I use the term in the show here, but it basically gives you the standard rundown, which we've talked about previously, about people really need to be careful what they post. Other people can read them. People in my social networks are also people I work with, and I understand that. Yeah, I have to take that and say everybody that you trust with your content, you have to trust everybody that person trusts, and then so on and so forth. So it's kind of a neat little way to boil it down to, I believe it's 10 little rules about how you actually go about conducting yourself, and they could really be extrapolated onto a bunch of different social networks. So we're just kind of putting it out there, and I'm going to be responding to some of the different little postings that are there after the show's all up and over, but we've spent a little bit too much time talking about that. We're just going to move right on here. And I've had a lot of questions about how exactly I construct episodes, what exactly it is that I do, a little bit of questions about my work. Workflow. Now, if you are somebody like myself who spends a lot of time online and you read a lot of different websites, one of the biggest utilities that I would suggest everybody out there uses is Google Reader. It is a fantastic way to gather in all of the different information that you read. And once you have an account over at Gmail or anything else, you can just add in the Google Reader service. It's reader.google.com. And it's a way that you can subscribe to different websites that have the RSS logo, that tiny little orange logo with the two or three little radio waves coming out of it. And if you don't understand what RSS is, you really need to take a minute and just do a Google search on it and understand it a little bit more than that. Think of it like this. With RSS, and this is going to be very short, I promise you. With RSS, that every time you load up your program, be it Thunderbird, be it Google Reader, or whatever, it goes out to the website that you would normally read, checks it to see if there's any new content. That website updates its RSS feed, and then you download the specific portion of the different articles that they've included in the RSS feed. So it's a way that you can check to see which websites are updated. You don't ever have to go to the website after you read the RSS feed, because you know, you're getting the articles, you're downloading all the content into your reader, and it's a way to really read and follow a lot of different discussions at once. So, for instance, today I had something like 2,500 articles that were listed in my news source category alone. It's the different articles that I parse through to find information for the Caffeination. So, you know, being able to just scan over them very quickly, and they're from something like 25 different sites, so being able to scan over them very quickly, I can pick out the ones that have interesting titles, the ones that have funny pictures or stuff like that, without having to spend too much time. So I highly suggest you give that a shot in case you already haven't. And then the other thing that's kind of breaking onto the scene right now, which doesn't work for me yet, is Google Gears. I use Firefox on the Mac to do a lot of my reading, and for some reason, every time I've tried to download Google Gears over the past 2 days, it's kind of bombed out on me. It hasn't said that it's available. So if anybody out there has any suggestions about that, you know, please feel free to email me at caffeination@gmail.com. But for right now, it's a way to read that kind of information offline. All right, moving right on. I don't usually like to, at least publicly, delight in the misery of others. But there's a certain small subset of humans, which I like to call pains in the rear end. And there's one giant man in that entire colony of people named Jack Thompson. He's that guy who's constantly suing Rockstar and constantly suing everybody to keep violent video games out of the hands of children, but which seems all right on the cover of everything. But when you really look down into it, he's incredibly manic with how he handles himself. He's very litigious. He basically ties up court systems and things that he knows he can't win, and he does it all in a quasi-religious, quasi-political kind of mindset. So if you don't know about him, you're better off just checking the Wikipedia article about him. I'm not even going to link up to him beyond this story, but apparently he's, you know, pushed one person too far, too long, and he actually walked out of his disbarment hearing. He's a lawyer. He's being disbarred in Florida for his conduct. That's how bad of a lawyer he is, and that's how very good at creating incredibly confusing and nasty and ridiculous documents he is. I'm doing very poor service to the entire Jack Thompson scenario, but basically he's a nut. There's no other way to put it there. So they're actually giving him an enhanced disbarment. The Florida bar has recommended that he be prohibited from practicing law or applying the practice of law for 10 years. So that is basically essentially killing this man's career. And I got to tell you, it sort of deserves to be killed if you really look at it. He actually filed a brief called Thompson's Formal Objection to the June 4th Sanctions Hearing, which apparently was a 14-page, 4,500-word objection, where he basically called that the Florida Bar Association fascists. He denied that he was involved in some sort of culture war. He then aligned himself with the newly, he started quoting things out of the Bible. He aligned himself with Hillary Rodham Clinton and Barack Obama, and he said that they were going to some kind of crusade against the dangers posed by Grand Theft Auto. He loves jumping on any kind of tragedy that's out there. Anytime somebody dies in a horrific fashion, he automatically blames video games, including the Virginia Tech shootings and a whole bunch of other stuff. So the man is basically a publicity hound and not a very not a very deft person at maneuvering through the sphere of influence. He doesn't really influence people so much as he incites a very, very visceral reaction from gamers. If you're a gamer, you know of him or you know of his work. That's about as easily as I can explain it. What would you do if you had an iPhone? Well, personally, I would enjoy using it, but I don't like AT&T service. That's pretty much what it's come down to. I like Verizon service. I hate how they cripple the phones, but I'm stuck with their service at this point. So I want to be able to do the very, very basic function of using a phone. I want to be able to call people. And when I had AT&T, or when I had actually Singular service, I had issues with calling people. So I've just stuck with Verizon for a while. However, if you did have an iPhone, would you use it to power a robot? I don't know if you would, because I'm pretty sure that the cardinal rule of managing robots is that you don't want to give them access to the network, because then they can connect to other robots, and then we're going to have the complete confluence of circumstances that's going to create said robot uprising that we've been talking about for so long. Well, apparently a bunch of guys who got together and they've decided to create a brain for a robot out of a iPhone so that they can give it updates to a browser via Wi-Fi and have it control a Lego Mindstorm NXT kit through light sensors and allow it to steer all over the place. This is insane. And apparently there's a video that I can't watch right now. I don't know what's wrong with the actual machine I'm trying to check this out on, but I just thought this was awesome. This is a completely unintended use, and that's where I really think a lot of the different products that are out there right now shine. It's that there's unintended uses that these things are getting, played off on that really kind of, bring out the design beauty in them. So the fact that you can control things like lights with Twitter make it fantastic. The fact that you can control robots with your iPhone make it that much cooler. So it's a little bit more geek cachet that these people are playing with, but we're going to move right along to the next little piece of geek love. Roombas. Everybody is playing with Roombas. I don't know what it is about these vacuums. They're very, very menial robots, but they're so widely available, and they're so the company itself is so open to people playing around with the architecture that it's really kind of fun to hack into them. Well, apparently a gentleman over in, I believe he's in Japan, has decided to create Pac-Man with his Roomba. When I first saw the title, I was incredibly excited. I was like, this is awesome. He's going to create this whole course. It's going to eat some kind of trash, and you're going to have it go around. Maybe he'll even create some kind of ghost out of other vacuums or Roombas or something like that, and they'll try and attack this one. Because you can have it aware via Bluetooth. People have controlled their Roombas with Wiimotes. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different things that are out there. And this story from Hackaday is a little bit of a letdown, I gotta say. This is all only and basically a case mod for his Roomba. All he did was place a circuit board on the all he did. I mean, this is still impressive for somebody who doesn't know how to do it. But still, when you look at the length and the breadth of the other different Roomba hacks that are out there, including the epic Frogger incident in Texas, which I will have to find, but including the epic Frogger incident, we're going to have to... It doesn't really stand up against the greatness of previous hacks. The entire thing is he has somewhere around 448 LEDs on the top of the Roomba. They're controlled via a small controller that actually sit under the LED panel. And all they do is they make the Pac-Man startup sound. They make it look like a giant Pac-Man as it's going around, so it actually opens and closes its mouth as the robot moves. And then when the robot turns itself off or stops, it makes the Pac-Man dying symbol and actually, boop, and then just kind of drops it out. That's really all good, and at the end he had kind of some, he had something where it was actually sucking up little paper ghosts, and I thought that was fun, but it just seems like one of those chances for greatness, and it kind of died. He makes some comment at the end that he actually wants to eventually have them play a game. It's like, that's when you should have showed us this. You should have kept this part under wraps, and when you actually had multiple Roombas, or a Roomba actually eating some sort of LED power pellet of some sort, then that's when you should have burst onto the Hackaday scene, or whatever modding scene that you had out there with your fantastic design. Alright, now taking it to one step further, instead of Roomba Pac-Man, how about we do a little bit of the Whopper, the computer from War Games. That computer was able to learn. it was able to take the outcome of games, specifically tic-tac-toe, and basically come out with the postulate that the only winning move is not to play, you know, in direct relation to global thermonuclear war, one of the options that they had on the fun little game thing. One of the fun things I did in Works, actually, when the message of the day, when you actually log into one of my servers, it gives you the entire list of stuff from Whopper so that you can actually choose. It doesn't really do anything. It doesn't allow you to choose. It just has a little thing, and of course, at the bottom, says, you know, just kidding, but still. So I love that movie. I love War Games. It's really old school hacker movies, and they're really fun. But one of the things that I've always kind of been interested in is when robots actually start to learn. When, you know, it's one of the things that's eventually going to lead to our downfall, but it's going to be a fun ride, I got to tell you. So there's a series of Roombas that are actually playing an augmented reality game. So these things are able to, you know, actually basically play tag through a series of client-server relations. These are Java-powered clients, computers that are actually sitting on top of the Roombas. They appear to have very unique and distinctive patterns on the top of them so that they can actually identify the other players, and that these small universal robot vehicles, which have the awesome name of Smurfs, actually build a database of events. So they basically play a litany of games and then try and future plan based off the client-server relation for more games. And it's kind of cool to see. It's really another article from Hackaday, which I got to tell you, been fantastic lately. But it's really kind of funny to see people using Roombas like this, because you can pretty much be sure that they're not actually vacuuming anything at that point. And it just really speaks to the unintended consequences thing that we were talking about, the unintended uses of design. And Roombas are pretty much the best example of that. So I gotta love that, and just moving right along here. All right, speaking of unintended consequences, you don't want to block a handicap ramp. It's for other reasons other than karma, especially because now out there is a fire-breathing wheelchair that is the best or worst idea on four wheels this year, according to Engadget. I got to tell you, I was under a little bit of pressure from a couple of the different social networks I'm on right now, because I'm going to have a tough time topping the monkey with three arms story from the last thing. The monkey, or I think it was either the last show or the one before, the monkeys that actually controlled things with their mind and actually had a third arm, a third robotic arm. And I pretty much have decided that only four races can beat a monkey with three arms. I mean, that's just plain and simple. So in the entirety of the Voltron of social networks that I've joined up with, it's pretty much that's the bar that we've set for this. So I think that this might come close to a monkey with three arms, but not quite. There's a gentleman out there by the name of Lance Greathouse, awesome name. He took golf cart parts, a marine rescue helicopter seat, and a flamethrower, and decided to create a wheelchair that can zip along at 22 miles an hour, and it can throw huge, massive fireballs in front of it. So I'm pretty sure if you have any friends who have the unfortunate incidence of being placed into a wheelchair for an extended period of time, you'd like them to be able to, first of all, defend themselves, second of all, have a little bit of mobility. So it's not necessarily like they have to load the wheelchair into any kind of van at this point in time. They can actually clip along at a nice 22 miles an hour. And I got to tell you, from my commute from Northeast Philadelphia down to Temple, yeah, it's a 16-mile commute, and I average around 18 miles an hour on my commute. So this thing would be more than capable of actually making that trip. And here's the quote from Lance that they kind of closed it out with. It says, "It was made for the disabled person looking for something a little different. Why drive something that looks like a medical device when you can drive something lethal?" With that in mind, let's just hope he doesn't ever play around with the segues. But just wanted to kind of pass it along because I thought it was an awesome thing. All right, up next we have the Google Shell. This was introduced to me by Leo Nell from Twitter and a couple other people from Twitter that I didn't write your names down. I'm very sorry. But basically there's an offshoot of Google that's trying to program this. This is not an official Google product. But basically this gentleman by the name of Stefan Grothkup has actually decided to create a complete text-based reference or a shell supported by Google. So it makes Google queries for you and stuff like that. It's a very clean text interface that I'm probably going to program into my phone when it really comes down to it. This is a lot quicker to load and a lot quicker for my my Palm Pilot and stuff like that to load than the blank Google homepage, because this is entirely text. There's no graphics at all. You can type in help and find all the different lists of commands. So you can type in commands, aliases, you can go to the web, you can search for images, you can go through wikis, news, blogs, feeds, video, places, and translate. I mean, these are all just simple text commands. So when you search for the when you type in web, and which it's already actually kind of starts in, you type in caffeination, let's just see what happens. It actually comes with, hey, the caffeination homepage in one of the last episodes we did, and then YouTube caffeination, which I remember signing up for that, but I don't remember actually doing anything with that. But it's kind of fun to see there, and I got to tell you, I love text interfaces for their simplicity. I love the way that they're kind of low maintenance. You don't have to worry about, you know, broken JPEGs or anything like that. So I just wanted to kind of pass it along, and thank you to everybody who passed that along to me. And then last but most certainly not least here in the TechCruft, we have a fun little article submitted by the one and only Nightwise from over at Nightwise.com, who was actually kind of putting it out there in the early morning today, and I put it aside so I wouldn't play with it until I got home tonight. But I love Commodore 64 games. It's what I was raised on. It's the first computer that we had in our house. It's where my dad learned to program. It's where I learned to program for a certain extended period of time. And there's a link out there right now to C64S.com, and there's some really fun games that they actually had in there. One of my favorite that I remember, and I, as soon as I saw it, it just brought back a flood of memories from a really early time in my life, is actually called Blue Max. And the idea behind the game is where you're actually a pilot in, I think, World War One era, and you actually have to land on these different landing strips around there. Your idea is to bomb the enemies and shoot the fighter planes down, and it's incredibly low-tech and really fun and kind of difficult to actually play. So I heartily suggest you head on over to check out some classic Commodore 64 games, if that's the kind of thing you're into. And that about wraps up the TechCruft section. Only one little thing here to say. This is the last call for zombie plans. Now, zombie plans have been pouring in fairly frequently. People have kind of submitted to us different things. They said, you know what, this is what I plan to do. It can be something as simple as I'm getting a shotgun, I'm loading it with a bunch of shells, and I'm just going to, you know, sit in my car and just take the people out until I run out of bullets or run out to the last bullet. I'd like to know what you're kind of thinking with this. Now, it has been posed to me, what kind of zombies are we talking about here? Are we talking about your garden variety, mumbling, stumbling, we want brains kind of zombies, or are you kind of talking about the intelligent, the crafty zombies? We're talking more about the Sam Raimi kind of zombies. We're talking about very calm, very cool, collected, no intelligence, just kind of hunger kind of zombies. So that's the zombie plan that we're actually formulating. Although, when you really think about it, you should be formulating zombie plans for all occurrences of zombies. So just putting that out there, you know what I mean? But we're accepting plans. We're going to put together the massive caffeination zombie plan, kind of as a collection of all the different things that people have said, and we're going to be passing it along to you on episode 240, which will be airing this Sunday, which of course is the 8th of June 2008. So that will be the day that the zombie plan is put into effect, and that's when everybody kind of has like a baseline to operate from. Might give you some new ideas. You might find a new weapon that you didn't think you had. So just putting it out there, hopefully you'll enjoy it. All right, caffeine and food section. I would love to have made this the picture of audio for the episode, but it's Dilbert, and I know they're very rabid about how they protect their intellectual property. You know, gotta love Scott Adams because he does fantastically funny work, but you know, gotta respect his wishes at the same point in time. So I just linked up to the strip. It's a great strip about Wally and coffee. I love the strips that involve Wally and coffee, so I just wanted to kind of put it out there, kind of a link up. It's actually today's or yesterday's strip at this point, so I wanted to pass it along. Hopefully you enjoy it. All right, some people have too much money. That's pretty much a given. I mean, in any society where you have a divergent little scale of people, you have the poor, you have the rich, you have everybody in between. Well, some people just have too much money. And one of those people is Raoul Sud, the founder of Voodoo PC and the chief technical officer for HP's global gaming business. He apparently had a birthday recently, and he decided to cut his birthday cake with a MacBook Air. This is probably going to be his let them eat cake kind of thing, because Mac fans are relatively rabid. And this is probably considered slightly disrespectful. There's a lot of different people out there that are currently making fun of the MacBook Air because of its thinness, saying, you know, it's razor sharp. Somebody said it's actually a danger to cut limbs. People have been showcasing different things that you can cut with them. So this is just the next the next kind of step in, on along that thing. But I had to put it in the caffeine and food thing because the cake actually looks pretty good. So let them eat cake cut with a MacBook Air. Interesting, huh? All right, now there's an article over at energyfiend.com which talks about stupid people, basically. It's hot coffee burns again. Apparently there's some gentleman in Fort Knox, Kentucky, who apparently has a third-degree burn on his leg, which is incredibly painful, caused from hot coffee. And he's saying, you know, he's suing somebody for it, obviously. And again, we're going back to the McDonald's lawsuits about the different things about why should coffee be hot. Well, that's probably because it's the culturally relevant way to serve it. But one thing I would kind of push beyond this article is you really need to be aware of what your coffee and kids, any hot beverage and young children. So if you're like myself and you have a young child, put the coffee down when you're picking the kid up. It's that simple. Put the coffee down in an area where your kid can't touch it. That's another little thing that you might want to think about. Because we've had incidents in our house where you know, it's been close. So wanted to kind of put it out there. Hopefully people will take that as a friendly little warning and beware, you know? All right, now the next little article that we have up here is how do you actually know your caffeine limit? Now this is a big question among the people who are starting to think back on the different little energy drink craze that we're currently in the throes of, and that it was started by people who either don't like the taste of coffee or wanted something a little bit more hardcore. It started by the Jolt Cola craze from a while ago, and you know that was the fuel for hackers. It was Jolt and ramen. That's what you ate, and it's grown well beyond that between Red Bull, Monster, and all these other strange drinks that are coming out there, and they're starting to develop a culture of people that have gone too far. You know, there's a lot of caffeine toxicity studies being done right now, and things as off the cuff as death by caffeine from over at Energy Fiend are one way to go out and check. But there is no, there's something you really need to understand, and it's kind of made halfway down. There is no program that you can plug your height, weight, body mass index, age, race, or gender into and find out your caffeine limit. There is no way to do it. So, however, it does list a couple of different things that can affect your metabolizing of caffeine, the first of which being if you're a female and you're on birth control pills. Well, I'm pretty sure if you're a male and you're on birth control pills, it'll probably do the same thing. But the other thing that you want to be aware of is if you're a smoker, you actually tend to metabolize caffeine two times as fast as people who don't smoke. So you're less likely to feel the negative effects of caffeine. So you're less likely to feel jittery or something like that, which probably is some sort of relevance to the correlation that coffee and cigarettes sort of have together. They kind of go hand in hand with some of the older coffee drinkers out there, people who like to smoke and have a cup of coffee at the same point in time. So you do need to understand and listen to your body is basically the thing that most people are coming out with now. It's common wisdom, but you know what? It's just like the rest of this episode. It's back to basics. You need to understand your body, you need to understand the different things that your body's telling you, and you have to realize when too much caffeine is enough. So, just wanted to kind of put it out there. Another weird thing that's out there, the best part of waking up is Smucker's in your cup. There's apparently a massive, massive merger going on right now. Folgers, with a name like Folgers, you can't go wrong. Folgers is merging with Smucker's. Well, actually, Folgers is being bought by Smucker's, and it's going to be interesting because Folgers is probably out of the big three, you know, the Maxwell House, the Taster's Choice, the Folgers. I usually gravitate towards Folgers when I need coffee and I don't have access to actual good coffee. If you're going to expand that to another, you know, widely available supermarket variety, I love Chock Full of Nuts coffee. It's fantastic. However, when you're going to expand it to actually even better and good coffee, then I like to go with the different independent varieties that are out there. But, you know, push comes to shove. We all need our coffee fix, and you have to get it however you can. So it's going to be interesting to see what exactly happens, if anything, to Folgers, because I'm pretty sure that the actual coffee side of Folgers is probably doing very well, because coffee is one of those things, especially instant coffee and coffee that you brew in your own home, that's probably not going to die up despite the fact that we're in a recession as it is, but, you know. All right, and then the last little story that we actually have here is coffee cup coat racks. There's a designer with a great Icelandic name that I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce because I would do a great disservice to this man, who has decided to create a coat rack out of coffee mugs. And it's an interesting use of them, and they're very much common household items, and they look kind of cool sitting on the wall there. And he has them in two different fashions, one where the actual handles are placed up, and that they're wide enough so that if you were to hang a coat on it, the coat wouldn't fall off. And I think it would be kind of cool to see this in place in a coffee house, and I'm probably pretty sure that this has happened in some sort of coffee house somewhere else up until this point. But I haven't seen it documented anywhere on the web, so I'm just putting it out there to you. So if you have a bunch of coffee mugs that you're not using and you have a place that you'd like to put a strange-looking coat rack, I'm pretty sure you could just glue a whole bunch of them to the wall and do the same thing for a lot less money, and you too can be Icelandic. So that about wraps it up for the caffeine and food section. Not a lot of really good coffee news lately. Like I said before, there's a direct correlation with the temperature outside in the northern hemisphere, at the very least, and the amount of coffee news that's out there. The warmer it gets, the less people tend to think about coffee, I guess, and the less news that's out there. However, during the colder months, when people really need that hot, warm pick-me-up in the morning, there is a veritable plethora of coffee news all over the place. So I just wanted to kind of put this out there as a fun little thing, and hopefully you enjoyed today's show. This has been Caffeination number 200. That's right, 239. The 2B edition, hopefully the basics have not failed us here. If you'd like to send us a comment, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, anything else you'd like to do, including your zombie plans, please feel free to email them to caffeination@gmail.com. You can phone me at 215-240-1319 and leave a voice comment or feedback that way. You can Skype me at TheCaffeination, all one word. You can find me on Twitter, Jaiku, Plurk, pretty much anything as Caffeination. And that about wraps up today's episode. You can find this episode and all the other ones like it over at www.caffeination.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.